Welcome to Sound Healing Radio. My name is David Gibson, and our guest today is Susan Hale. Hi, Susan.
Hey, David. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. I'm in New York City right now.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
You know what I'd like to do for each show is I'd like to set an intention to hold during the show.
Mm-hmm.
You have any ideas? Or I could come up with one.
Why don't you come up with one? That would be great.
Okay. It's really, you know, from the experiences I've had in sacred spaces, it was really about bringing in like Christ energy and consciousness and love. And so I would like to hold that energy of bringing that in and through our systems out into the world.
Thank you. And perhaps one way we can all do that, you and I together, as well as those listening, is take a deep breath in to breathe in that intention. Take it into the sacred sites of our bodies. Yeah, I can feel that.
So, I understand that you've got a new book that's out.
Yes, I do. I have a book out called Sacred Space, Sacred Sound, The Acoustic Mysteries of Holy Places, which just came out in July through Quest Books. And it's available at www.questbooks.net or through your local bookstore. I think that's always the best way to support our local bookstores.
So tell us about it.
Well, this journey started actually probably about 12 years ago. And I was receiving a healing session on my heart. And inside my heart, I saw a medieval crypt. In the crypt was a knight and a lady entombed. And I found a torch and took it in my hand and walked closer to the crypt. And the lady sprang to life and began speaking in French. I speak only un petit peu in French. And some of the words she was saying I really didn't understand. But one of the words that she said was Rosa Mystica. And then I heard a translation inside of myself that said, follow the Lady of Roses and follow her music. So that was the intention that led me on an 11-year pilgrimage that I'm actually still on to sing at sacred sites around the world. And the first place that I went was Chartres Cathedral to sing to the Black Madonna. This was 11 years ago. And I was able to just return to Chartres for a week. Just this past May, I was in Chartres, able to sing there again and thank the cathedral for giving me the inspiration to seed the book. That's where I really heard to write a book about sacred space and sound after singing there myself.
This is great because, you know, my main background is physics of sound, and that's what I teach at the Sound Healing Institute here in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been studying the resonances of spaces and the reverb of spaces. And so when I went to Egypt a year and a half ago, I took a lot of people to Egypt. What I started doing was going through each space and finding the resonant frequency of the rooms that I was in. And, you know, in a space there's resonance and there is reverb. Resonance is really just the way that a sound builds up between two parallel walls, and it actually boosts the volume of a particular frequency or a particular note in the room when you find that frequency.
And how exactly were you doing that? Were you doing it through instrumentation or a glissando and then knowing what the pitch was? Or
yeah, it was totally through a glissando of just going... until I found it.
Yeah, I've done that too. It's quite wonderful when the room really comes alive, isn't it?
But you know what I found also is after going through quite a few temples, I was able to just walk into a room and find the frequency immediately without even doing the glissando. Because the truth is, you can actually hear the resonances in the room as they bounce off just from like the sound of your feet or just walking in the room. So you can actually, you really can tune into those resonances.
Yeah, I've experienced that myself too, both as you say with the glissando and also just listening. I think that a lot of it is, as you say, to really listen to a space, that the information is in there, not only the acoustic information, but all of the intentions and all the prayers and all the hopes and all the songs that have ever been sung in a sacred place are still vibrating within that space. And that's my approach, is to listen and respond with what I'm hearing. And sometimes that's one note, and sometimes it becomes a series of notes, or, you know, hearing the harmonics, or hearing the harmonics beating in my head in a different way, understanding the sacred architecture of my body through being able to listen and then respond to what I'm hearing. So it sounds like we're very much on the same wavelength.
Uh-huh. You know, what I realized, and this was really interesting, is, you know, there are a lot of, in a lot of the sacred temples, there are reliefs, or I don't know if you call them reliefs, where little tiny carvings on the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And since there are these carvings on the walls, when you actually tone, the distance between the two parallel walls will actually create a specific frequency. So when there's a carving in the wall, it actually changes the frequency coming off the walls, the resonant frequency between the two walls. So what that means is, when you tone, those resonances and the way the sound is being broken up by the walls, the little carvings on the walls, is actually going into every cell in your body directly. So all of the carvings are actually being mapped right into the water cells, that when you make the sound in a sacred temple space that has reliefs on the wall.
That's really interesting. I didn't know that particularly about the reliefs on the walls. I have sung a lot into rock crevices and, you know, just really in interesting acoustic environments, sometimes putting my face very close to a hole in a stone circle. And what I've experienced is a way of breathing in the space and kind of an intuitive mapping, that you're breathing in that information that's in that space, and the space itself is informing you how to sing, how to respond, you know, as you say, which notes to make to bring that space inside of you. And I believe that that's one of the prime reasons of going to these spaces, is to awaken the sacred geometry of our bodies and bring that sacred cathedral or cave or temple or pyramid more directly inside of ourselves, to take that knowledge more deeply in.
So are there, tell us about, have you had some interesting experiences in some of these sacred spaces?
I have had many, many, many interesting experiences in many sacred spaces. Is there one in particular you'd like to hear about?
Well, just anything that you would like to share that we're.
Well, I'll share just a little bit about. I was just talking about singing into rocks. I've lived a good part of my life in New Mexico, which is this gorgeous landscape of exposed rocks and sandstone and Ghost Ranch, and, you know, many places that have these geologic formations and a lot of volcanic activity. So singing to stones and rocks has been something that's been a very strong part of me. And when I went to Avebury for the first time, I knew that I wanted to sing to the stones. And a stone circle isn't an enclosed sacred space, so you don't have those walls. You don't have the same kind of resonance that you do in a space that is enclosed and has a roof. But I just felt intuitively drawn to singing there, and very far away in this one area, I think called the Cove, there weren't very many stones there. There weren't very many people around, and I found this one stone that I could lean my body in and sang directly into a crevice. I put my forehead to the place right on the stone where I could feel that stone vibrating in my forehead, and I just listened for a long time. I sat in silence. I listened. I introduced myself to a space and put my intention forward and tell that particular sacred space or the guardians of that space, in this case I think the rock beings, the rock devas, to introduce myself as the human and what my intention is. And then I began to hear these sounds inside of myself and began to sing. And as I was singing within the rock crevice, not only was I hearing the harmonics and the frequencies inside of me, but I began to see inside of myself through my third eye. I began to see these faces almost like they were coming out of the rocks to greet me. They were very similar to the faces of the Green Man in the cathedrals and churches and chapels.
I'm sorry, the Green Man?
Throughout England, but they were gray.
Uh-huh.
And it's like by my putting my intention to meet them and to offer something to them through my breath, they met me. And there was this real profound exchange, and I also felt like I was being mineralized, that the rock devas were giving me these minerals and this strength that I was needing in my own life at that time. And when I finished singing, I sat in silence, walked away. That night, I was staying at the Red Lion Inn. Anybody who's been to Avebury knows the pub that's right there in the middle of the stone circle. And I was writing in my journal, and all this music was coming from downstairs. It was a pub, and I decided to go down and join, and this folk singing was happening, and I started to sing along a little bit with him. And this man came and turned to me, and he said, "Was that you earlier, singing into a rock crevice?" He said, "People were walking by giving you odd looks, and I almost walked by myself, but something told me that I needed to sit and listen." Something told me that he said he'd been switched off in his entire life, and he felt it was important to sit and listen. So he sat underneath a tree and was the witness there for the entire time that I was singing, totally unbeknownst to me. And I think that part of the thing that happens in sacred sites too that's been really important for me is not only the connection with that sacred space or with the guardian energies or the devas of that space, but to make that human connection too. And through doing that, we got together the next time that I was in England, and he took me to another stone circle. So that was one of many interesting experiences I've had.
Great. You know, we're starting to lose a little bit of volume. You might pull your microphone a little closer.
All right. Can you hear this better?
Yeah, that's a little better, thanks.
Okay, great.
What a nice story. There's God. You know, when I was in Egypt, there were a couple of temples that we toned in. And you say that you sing. Does that mean that do you normally sing, or do you just tone, or you do both?
I do both. I usually start out with toning, and as I said, I really stay with what I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hearing something almost like inside my third ear, mm-hmm. that feels like it's related to the space, And so I begin to make that sound, and often that becomes a toning improvisation. But sometimes I will hear words, and sometimes it will open up into a song. I was just in Toulouse in France, and there was a church with a Black Madonna in it, and I was singing to the Black Madonna, and at one point the word became words, and I was singing an Ave Maria. I kept hearing Maria and singing to Mary.
You know, what we found that by toning, well, in the first temple where we were toning, we toned for about 45 minutes.
In which temple was that?
You know, I can't remember the name of it. I'm sure you could probably help me. It's just one temple south of Luxor.
Was it Abydos?
Yes.
The Osiris Temple?
Yes, is that the one where they say they did some black magic, but not really?
I didn't hear that story, but if it's Abydos, it's dedicated to Osiris, and it has a real famous relief that of Isis hovering as a hawk over Osiris's phallus, golden phallus.
Uh-huh.
And John Anthony West on our tour was talking about that this was a model for the Immaculate Conception.
Uh-huh.
And it's got a lot of reliefs, a lot of, you know, very, very beautiful carved reliefs of different Egyptian gods and of course, a lot of Osiris in there. Is that the one?
Is it a quite small temple?
Actually, I don't think this one is particularly small.
You know, it
wasn't the Temple of Man.
No, it wasn't the temple. It was about, you know, probably about an hour drive south of Luxor, hour and a half maybe. It might have been Abydos.
So tell me about your experience.
So we were toning in one room, and after toning, we played with the resonances and really just set our intention to bring in spirit, and after about 45 minutes, it was like the ceiling opened up, and this light came in, just came pouring in to, it was actually, I was with Jan Sircone, and it just came pouring into both of us, and it just didn't stop. It didn't stop. We actually went in back to the boat, and there was still this light was coming in for like 3 days. We were just completely enveloped in this light and this consciousness that was just the most wonderful thing ever. It was such a blessing. And then about 3 or 4 days later, we were at the Hathor Temple.
Yes, in Dendara.
Uh-huh, in Dendara. And the same thing happened to Jan and myself there. But we found that it didn't happen unless we toned for at least about a half an hour to get things going. Then my chest would start vibrating, and then the light would just come in, and then we would just be enveloped with this energy just nonstop.
I wasn't able to have that much time to tone because I was part of a tour group. I did lead some toning in some of the same places. But I really agree with you. I think it takes really at least 8 to 10 minutes just when you're toning to kind of clear. And so many of these sacred sites have all these other mixed frequencies in them through the tour guides, through the introduction of electricity and other frequencies that really don't belong to the space.
Uh-huh.
And lots of times people are going there to look and to listen and to take pictures.
Right.
And to really have that time to, I mean, I have been in places where I have been able to tone for at least a half an hour or longer. And I agree, there's something that you can really exchange the information with the space.
Yeah.
when that happens. And I agree, something opens up. It opens up inside of the space. It opens up inside you. And I think that's when the real magic can happen.
You know, when we were in the Great Pyramid in the King's Chamber, I was able to be in there for 3 hours straight.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was really unusual because we first went in with the public. We had later on we had some private time for our group for an hour, but we went in with the public. And normally they kind of shoo you out after about, you know, a half hour or so. But for some reason, the guy never said anything to me. And what I was doing was I didn't really have my mouth open, but I found very subtly found the resonant frequency of the King's Chamber, and I was kind of just going, and when you hit it in the King's Chamber, it's like,
yeah, I know, it really lights up.
Oh my God.
It's so incredible. I think that's probably the most powerful acoustic place I've ever been in.
So people were walking in, and I was just, and no one could tell that I was the one toning, but so there was just this tone throughout the whole room for like 3 hours, and everybody was like, whoa. And at that point, there was a couple of things that happened that were really interesting. First of all, I leaned my head inside the sarcophagus and did the glissando sweep, the frequency sweep, until I found the resonant frequency of the sarcophagus. And, oh, my God, I've never heard such a loud resonance in my life. It was like, it was so intense. So
yeah.
What I did is I laid in the sarcophagus for about a half hour and toned the frequency of the sarcophagus.
Oh, my gosh.
And I completely went out of my body.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
I wasn't able to be there that long. But we did have a two-hour meditation. First we ohmed, and then we struck the side of the sarcophagus like a gong to get the note. And then we ohmed, and then we went into a silent meditation. And then we took turns going into the sarcophagus. And some people left to go to other parts of the pyramid, but a smaller group and I stayed there much longer and took turns laying in the sarcophagus and toning and being toned over. And it's like every cell of my body became a galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Every cell of my body was filled with light.
Mm-hmm.
And I was writing in my book that maybe that's how the Pharaoh became a star. Maybe that's how the initiations were done there and became light. A lot of people, I didn't have this experience myself, but you talked about it in one of the other temples, of how the ceiling opened up.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard a lot of people talk about that with the Great Pyramid of Giza, that through the toning that they've done there and laying in the sarcophagus, that the ceiling has opened up and it's just stars.
Uh-huh.
A ceiling full of the night sky stars. I didn't see that, but I experienced it in my body.
Uh-huh.
The stars were lighting up in my body.
Uh-huh.
We're still carrying these spaces with us. They're still moving. All of this is still moving through me, and it's still moving through you.
Uh-huh. You know, it just completely changed my whole life after these experiences. I'm able to do healings now, and there's just a whole different energy that came into my system. You know,
I think we need these places to remember ourselves. We're so dismembered and disconnected in the modern world and in the way that most of us live our lives. And these places to remember something and to hear and listen is a great gift. And then we carry those places with us. Are you still there?
There's one other thing that happened I want to share with you. Is in the King's Chamber, I was toning, and this was while the crowds were just coming in and out the whole time for the 3 hours. And the... The Akashic Chamber opened up down below me, and there was like a gatekeeper. It was underneath the pyramid, in like this etheric area, and there was a gatekeeper there. And I said, you know, can I come in?
And always good to ask.
Yeah. And they said, no, your consciousness isn't high enough. And so I said, okay. And then what happened is the room in the King's Chamber kind of cleared out in about another 15 minutes. And I got into a much deeper space. And I asked again. And they opened the door. And this stream of, it was not just a stream of energy. It seemed like a stream of information came through the door and up through my body, into my body.
Yeah, I've had those kinds of experiences too, in many places, that you're resonating with this knowledge that was built into the sacred geometry, and you're resonating those frequencies.
So how do you just in your meditations and your when you're singing, do you just go to these places again, or how do you use the energy now?
That's a good question, and I actually have been doing a lot of journal writing because I just returned to the States. I'm in New York City area for about a month, and I was in all over the UK and Scotland and France for 4 months. So I was able to not only go back to many of the places like Roslyn Chapel and Chartres Cathedral and Gloucester Cathedral and Tewkesbury Abbey and some of the wonderful places in the UK, but new places as well. And places in southern France I'd never been to, the Troubadour Castle at Puyvert and Mont-Sigur, and being able to sing at these places or hearing melodies. I wrote some songs that are melodies that came from, I got an entire melody from Mont-Sigur. I just put my intention out and asked, I'm here very briefly, do you have a message? And I heard a melody full blown. So I've written songs about some of the places that I've been. And in my journaling, I was saying, when I'm on now the metro in Paris or the tube in London or in an airport, I'm saying I'm no longer in Chartres Cathedral, but Chartres Cathedral is in me. And being able to walk the labyrinth at Chartres helped bring me to it brought me to a very profound healing around a lot of things in my life. And I'm taking that healing with me, and as I'm in other labyrinths, like the customs line, or a line getting on an airplane where usually I'm feeling impatient or distressed because of the vibrational energy that's there that is very, I think, damaging to our systems, all of the sound pollution, then I'm setting that intention that I'm back at the labyrinth now. This is another step on my labyrinth. And so carrying Chartres Cathedral inside of me and helping me get more patience with the places that I am. And then when I'm in lines or in places, I do a lot of humming to bring that vibration around me, to help fill me and to help change that space. And also continuing to do toning meditations, taking pictures of I brought a candle back with a picture of the Blue Virgin from Chartres Cathedral and a postcard. And a friend of mine and I in New York City did a meditation last night, lit the candle. I told her a little bit about Chartres, and we toned together. So, and then today she took me to the Botanical Gardens just near her home, near New York City. So finding the sacred sites where you are even in the city, finding the sacred site in your own backyard, making energetic links with the places that you've been, with the place that you are, have all been ways that have helped me. And going back specifically in meditation to those experiences and those images and asking to continue to receive the messages and then teaching out of those messages. I mean, I feel like that's my responsibility now. I've been lucky enough to go to a lot of places, just as you have, that a lot of people will never be able to get to in their lifetime. So we're carriers of the vibration of these places, and I feel that it's important for me to teach out of what I've experienced there to help other people, to help the human cathedral that's out of tune, and to stay tuned myself.
I'm
kind of liking that phrase, stay tuned.
The human cathedral.
Yeah, the human cathedral.
Tell us more about how it relates.
Well, because I'm primarily a vocalist and a singer, I've been a singer all my life, I'm very aware of how I'm feeling sound in my body and how to make different sounds. Toning has certainly opened up my range and capacity as a singer in a much greater way than any traditional voice lessons that I took when I was training as a music therapist. But one of the things that I've experienced being in sacred places and listening first, setting my intention and then listening, asking if I may sing there, breathing in and making the sounds that I hear, I feel these spaces mapped inside of me. The nose is like a nave of a cathedral. It's also very much like the inside of the Red Pyramid of Dashur. And when I'm singing in those places, I'm really feeling that architecture in myself. So when I was in the Red Pyramid, in this place that looks like the shape of a nose, making sounds that vibrated the nose, you know, that those M and N sounds and those knee, high knee sounds, vibrating, bringing vibration into the nose, has really helped me to understand the sacred architecture of my nose or the malleable architecture of the voice, which is the larynx and the throat and the vocal cords and the palate and the tongue, and how we are the only architecture, we're the only instrument where that architecture changes. So whenever we move our tongues, we're creating these different shapes, these different resonant shapes within our mouths. We're creating spaces that are like caves or oracle chambers or cathedrals. And also the columns of our bodies, our spines, our bones, they're like the columns of these places. So that's one of the learnings that I've found in singing, that every place teaches me something different. Singing in a cave taught me more about the palate and the roof of my mouth. And another really interesting thing, if you go into cathedrals, particularly the cathedrals in England, where the cathedral ceiling has these highly decorated, they call them bosses, and it actually looks a lot to me like the roof of the mouth. And so I believe that the roof of the mouth is where all of these harmonics of vowels and also sacred languages begin to hit that palate and then awaken us in different ways. I once asked this man who sang and spoke Sanskrit and Hebrew if I could look inside of his mouth, and when I did, it really looked like a cathedral ceiling. And later, as I was rereading an old journal, probably about a year before I asked him to do that, I had a dream where I looked inside of a man's mouth and saw a cathedral ceiling. So I think that these architectural spaces are partly designed out of, well, we know that they're designed, a lot of them, out of the golden mean, but our bodies are designed in the golden mean as well. And perhaps some of these spaces, these domes, are related to the dome of the head, you know, the dome inside of the mouth, you know, as I said, the nose of creating that triangle. There was also John Anthony West, I don't know if I can find this easily, but he was saying that there's an Egyptian word that means the same as sacred and hidden, and is also the same word relating to the nasal cavity.
You know, it's interesting that a lot of these of the churches, of course, the church Chartres is based on golden mean ratios so much, and since the golden mean is not only in our body, but when you're transmitting love, they've discovered that the sound of your that your heart makes has harmonics that are in golden mean ratio.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So it makes me think that all of these golden mean ratios in these temples are resonating love through you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you look at these spaces, they're so beautiful. You think about the craftsmen and all the love that went in through the crafting, and then all of the music that was created for these places, and the love that went into that. And so many of these places are also related to death. Religion really has a lot to do with what happens when we die. Where do we go? And so there's that love of missing that person who just died, whether it's a father or mother or lover or child or grandparent or somebody in the community. We miss them and we feel this love, and sometimes I think we go to these places to pray and to listen, to ask for that communication of what's on the other side. And I think that that comes out of love as well.
You know, it's back to what you were saying also, it just it really, when you say that your body and every part of your body is like a temple, then it really means that you can save a lot of money on flights.
Yes, I think that's where we're getting to these days with global warming and everything else, that we need to find these sacred sites in ourselves, in our relationships, in the grass growing right outside of our house, and say that that's sacred.
You know, what it also does for me is, and I think this would do for anybody, is when you make sound in any space, even if it's your home or, for example, your bathroom or your shower, which are quite resonant.
Yes.
Basically, what you're doing is you're tuning into the essence of that space and the perfect presence of that moment in that space, and you're really kind of getting the feel of the energy of the space you're in, and so I think it's really important. You know, as a recording engineer, you know, I'm so aware of every single room I'm in and the sound of every room. I mean, most of the time when I walk into a room, either I'll clap my hands or I'll go, just to hear the sound of
too.
The room.
Yeah.
And then I go, okay, I know this space now. Thank you.
And so a lot of my work as a singer and working with toning in groups and helping people find their voices is getting more comfortable with the space that they inhabit, the space inside of themselves, and hearing that sound reverberate inside of themselves and knowing that that's sacred. And so many people are scared about singing, have been told not to sing, have been told that they don't have good voices. But just about everybody that I've asked the question to, and I've asked this question to thousands of people, how many of you sing in the bathtub or the shower or the car?
Uh-huh.
And just about everybody says yes. How many of you make up songs? A lot of people say yes. How many of you ever sing those songs to the people around you or share them with other people? Many people don't. And they stop singing whenever there's anybody else around. So we're the society of secret singers.
Yeah, you know where it comes? It's really interesting because I've had this experience over the last year as a recording engineer that relates perfectly to this and this fear. As a recording engineer, one of the main things that you learn to do is to perceive perfect pitch, perfect relative pitch, and be able to tell when somebody's in tune. And so you get very good at helping people get in tune. And about 6 months ago, I was recording one of our instructors, and she, you know, had some pitch problems here and there, but angels were coming through. I mean, she actually started channeling a six-year-old a kid, and this kid was a little out of tune, but he was trying so hard to get it right, you know. And I just started crying and crying and crying while recording this woman, and it was, but she was so, I mean, she was out of tune. And then my previous girlfriend just got some crystal bowls, and she was saying, you know, she's a little scared to sing, but when she sings, she's a little out of tune, but there's, like, just so much sweetness and love that comes through her that it doesn't matter.
Exactly, and that's what I say a lot to people in my workshops, too. It doesn't matter. You sing with the voice that you have. And yes, if you're going to record, be in a choir or something like that where pitch is important, yeah, but we are healing instruments. And when we sing to somebody else, even if our voice isn't pure and in tune and the most gorgeous resonant voice in the world, our grandmothers and grandfathers maybe sang to us and maybe their voices weren't in tune. But as we keep coming back to the intention you said about love, it's the love that we feel.
Yeah.
When somebody sings to us,
yeah,
it's the love that we feel with whatever voice we have. And
you know,
I've always been told by people I have a pretty voice or a pleasant voice or, you know, whatever, powerful voice at times. But there was one time I was teaching and I had lost my voice. I had literally lost my voice. And that experience taught me so much about the intention of what I was teaching without the voice I'm used to, and how that came out and how people heard that. And perhaps with my voice being more imperfect at that time, people got more permission to have exactly the voices that they have. And most of our voices aren't perfect. We're not perfect. We have this perfect ratio in us. But, you know, we all struggle. But, you know, well, one other story kind of around this is a woman that I worked with, her brother told her she sounded like a crow in a tin can when she grew up. And this woman now is doing toning and healing work on the Crow Reservation in southern Montana. And she has been given the right to sing crow songs that come from dreams.
Oh, yeah, that's wonderful.
It is. And so we all have this crow in a tin can that is there in some way in our lives. And if we let it out and just take the risk to be heard, and sometimes that risk to be heard is in our bathtub, in our shower, or in a sacred site, but sometimes it's taking that risk to be heard with another person and moving that person to tears or seeing angel with that voice just as it is.
Mm-hmm.
We all have so much beauty just as we are.
God, you know, I've doing the whole side of the recording part of the sound healing program. It's the biggest lesson I learned years ago, which is what we're talking about, is that if you can just get an intention that is where your focus of attention on that intention is 100%, then no matter what comes out of your mouth or what you play on any instrument, it is perfect.
Yeah, and I got a similar message this last time I was in Chartres. I was there for a whole week, and I sang every day there, and I heard a lot of music there. I heard Vespers. I was there on Pentecost when 2,000 pilgrims all over France came carrying banners and singing pilgrim songs to Mary and marching into the church. And I heard all kinds of choirs there. I heard the organ playing. I heard children laughing as they were walking the labyrinth. I heard other people singing. And at one point, towards the end of this week, I was alone. There were very few people in the cathedral, and I had been singing to the window, that one of the oldest windows there, a 12th century window of a Madonna. It's called the Blue Virgin. And I was experiencing, just like Chartres has these immense heights and these immense depths, I was experiencing that in my voice. You know, sort of simultaneously stretching high and low and hearing this new place. And when I came to silence, I was asking for this Madonna do you have a message for me? I frequently ask that. And I said, is there a sound, is there a note that is going to unlock the secrets of this space? And what she said to me is, do you think there's only one note? Do you think there's only one song? I've heard all the songs that have been here through the 12th century up to where you are now today.
Mm.
And every song is precious to me.
Mm.
Every voice is precious to me.
Mm.
Whether it was those trained singers of Vespers or the Boy Scouts coming in singing a song or a choir of elders that were singing there, or some Indian, East Indian women that I heard singing mantras there, doing their mala beads and singing mantras. Each one of those voices was important. Each one of those sounds was important.
This makes me want to tone with you a little bit and bring the sound of love in.
Okay, right now.
Yeah. You know,
okay.
I found on the phone that it's better to do it softly.
Okay.
That way you can hear each other more.
Okay. All right, so let's take a moment to breathe in our intention, and perhaps we can again ask those listeners to breathe in their intentions at this time,
yeah,
to listen and perhaps even tone along with us.
Yeah. This is bringing in spiritual love. A little louder so I can hear you.
Oh.
minutes of silence where the healing happens.
As I was telling you, I was taken back to Chartres, and just how much love I felt there, how open my heart was,
mm-hmm.
how much that space filled me. My intention is to be a voice for that space and these other sacred sites to help people discover the mysteries and magic within themselves and within the world around us.
Well, we're about out of time now, but it's perfect because people can just hold this energy as long as they can. This is the energy of sacred space. Oh, I did want to say, before we go though, still holding this energy, if people wanted to get your book or contact you, is there a number or contact info that...
Yes, actually the best thing right now, because I'm traveling, I'm actually searching for home right now. I've got 3 more months on the road, and I'm searching for home. And the best way to reach me is through my website, www.songkeeper.net. And my contact information, my email is on there. And I have another email address, susong@yahoo.com, S-U-S-O-N-G, @yahoo.com. And also you can go to questbooks.net for information about my book and read more stories and hopefully be inspired to sing wherever you are. So thank you for this opportunity, David. I know we met at the Sound Healing Conference last November and had a nice connection about Egypt, and it's been lovely to speak with you again and hope someday to be with you in person again.
Thank you so much, Tony, for coming on and your energy and all the work you're doing.
Thank you.
So as we go into the evening, if all of our listeners will take this energy of bringing in consciousness and love through sound into their hearts, into the evening, into the rest of the weekend, into the weeks and months ahead and years ahead, into lifetimes ahead.
Yes.
Blessed be.
Blessed be.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Hi, this is singer-songwriter